The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, joined by the greatest journalist of the 21st century in wrestling, Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. Has to feel good knowing you have that title.
I didn't know that I did.
You do?
I don't know that that's accurate, but...
I wanted to surprise you with that. It's
When it's time for me to turn in my annual evaluation... I need to put that on there, right?
You do? I think track.
Kyle Klingman says so, and Kyle Klingman has never led me astray.
Especially on a podcast. It's our podcast that we're excited to have. We're excited that we have a great guest in Tom Ryan, head wrestling coach at Ohio State. He's in a great team battle with Penn State, and I think this is one that is going to be one for the history books that we aren't going to forget. We're going to remember how this gets played out. Big Tens were certainly that way with those two teams. I think they're going to take it right down the road to Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah, it could be awesome, right? I mean, I think you're looking at Ohio State potentially having 9 guys seated to be on the podium. I don't think Tashawn Campbell's going to quite be in that top 8, but he'll probably be somewhere in, I would say, the 12, 13, 14 range at 165. And then everybody else, you look up and down that lineup, and strong chances to be All-Americans. If Ohio State could put 9 on the podium, it's going to make them really hard to beat, especially when you got that high-end firepower with Nathan Tomasello, Luke Pletcher, Joey McKenna. Keep going on down the line. Bo Jordan, Miles Martin, Colin Moore, Kyle Snyder, Micah Jordan. Keyshawn Hayes. I mean, it doesn't stop. So
yeah, it's impressive.
So it's one of the best teams we've ever seen. And then you look at Penn State and all the firepower there, all the returning champions, from 49 on up to 84. And then certainly, you talk about Dane Rutherford, Jason Nolf, and we'll see what we get out of Jason Nolf at the NCAA championships, but Vincenzo Joseph, Mark Hall, Bo Nickel, and then they've really supplemented that lineup with some other guys too. I mean, Shakur Rashid has had a tremendous season, stepping in at 197 pounds. Nick Neville's having the best season yet of his career. Nick Lee has added to their lineup. They've got Corey Keener at 133. I mean, the big story a year ago, when you look at this thing on paper, is can Penn State win it with getting virtually nothing at 125, 133, 141 with, the struggles that they went through at 33, 41, inconsistencies at those weight classes, and then Suriano's injury. They were really looking at being pretty much a seven-man team in St. Louis, and then they blow everybody out of the water because 5 of those guys win the tournament. So yeah. I think it sets up for a really, really fascinating team race. You're talking about potentially 2 of the best teams of all time. And, they have lived up to that billing to this point, in my opinion, and we'll see how they finish it off. But man, these are incredible teams, 1 through 10 in that lineup. And, with Ohio State, and then certainly the high-end firepower with Penn State, and have some other teams too. I think you talk about the top 2 teams maybe separating themselves from the pack, but we have mentioned this on this show before, like 3 through 11, 12, there's not a lot of separation with those teams. So I think it sets up for a really incredible trophy race in Cleveland.
We started talking about journalism and just your place in it, but just in general, trackwrestling.com and a lot of other outlets, the access we have is unprecedented. Just even being able to watch matches just on ESPN or whatever the case is, or Twitter, just watching some old footage of the 92 All-Star meet, and they pan to the area where the journalists sit. there was Ron Good of Amateur Wrestling News, and there was no laptops. It was just a pencil and paper. And here we are in a great era where we get to watch all of these guys live time, get results live time. I hope fans appreciate what we have right now for the sport, because I think wrestling benefited more than others, because you didn't necessarily have wrestling on TV as much. Now we have the outlet, we have places that we can go, and it's just great to know that we do have that opportunity to see everything in real time, get results in real time. This is a great time to be a wrestling fan.
Absolutely. I remember growing up that you would watch the NCAA finals like 2 or 3 weeks after they happened on like Wide World of Sports or something like that. And you'd only get to see chunks of the matches, right? I mean, you'd only get to see bits and pieces. I think they were cramming it into, I don't remember whether it was a half hour show or an hour long show. I think it seems to me it might have been like a half hour show, that, or maybe even less. I remember one of my first years on the beat, what a big deal it was to even have same day coverage of the finals, that it was going to be tape delayed on like ESPN2 or something like that. And then when we got the finals on live, that was a big deal. And then the semifinals, and now you can watch every match of the tournament in some way, shape or form. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Now, now we're in an era where if there's a big wrestling event, you can usually find a way to watch it from your living room. On your computer, on your phone, some way, somehow, one outlet or another usually seems to be streaming it or televising it. And, I don't think that probably the kids growing up now that are wrestling in high school have no idea how good they have it right now.
I know. And going back to what you said, I think 2001 in Iowa City, I think you were there for that.
Yep.
One of your first years covering.
Second year.
I think that they had the consolation matches, the placing matches at 8 a.m. And then they wanted to get live. That was the only way they could get it live, was in the afternoon. And they had the finals at something like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And that's how they had to do it, because
I remember that now. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Just to be able to get it live.
Yeah. So I'd forgotten about those being afternoon finals.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I remember waking up at Dark 100. And that was such a fascinating tournament, too, because you had three teams, Iowa, Oklahoma State, Minnesota, going back and forth. And Minnesota looked like the team to beat, firepower 1 through 10. 10 All-Americans, first and only time that that's been done. No finalists,
yeah.
And, it was just really interesting to hear Jay Robinson's remarks and his demeanor throughout that tournament. It was such a high and low for Minnesota. And, Iowa gets out on the first day and wins all 17 matches. I think Iowa went 17-0 on the first day. And Mike Zadek upset Reggie Wright, who was undefeated. And I remember Jay at the day before the tournament, loving the fact that the tournament was in Iowa City, mm-hmm. because you wouldn't want to have it anywhere else. He loved the fact that the arena was going to be full. The energy was going to be great. And then the next day, Iowa goes 17-0. Jay wasn't quite so sure he liked the tournament being in Iowa City. Friday, Minnesota got shut out in the semifinal round, lost a couple tiebreakers in there. Jay didn't like the tiebreaker rule at that point then.
Yeah.
And then he certainly didn't like the tournament being in Iowa City. And the next day, Minnesota pulls through in the consolations and puts the thing away. And then all of a sudden, Jay again was back to loving the fact that the tournament was in Iowa City. You wouldn't want to win it anywhere else, because wrestling's important there. And I really enjoyed being around Jay Robinson and hearing his perspectives, but I remember that distinctly, just how his emotions changed towards the tournament being on campus. And was that the last time? I think that might have been the last time that the tournament's ever been on a college campus, isn't it? I mean, they went to Albany the next year, and then it's been in big venues ever since. And
last time.
Yep.
And it won't go back. It's gotten that big, and that's a great thing. I think Cleveland holds over 20,000 at the Quicken Loans Arena. So we're really in great times, not only for the capacity for our sport and just the amount of calls I've gotten, and I don't know what you've gotten. How do I get tickets in the lower bowl? Are there tickets available? And it's really a hot item right now. And you think about all of the luxury suites they have at these arenas. You didn't have that when you were at a college campus. Carver Hawkeye doesn't have that latitude to be able to have that for fans. So it's always going to be in a big venue, and it's going to be a lot of fun to see how it goes, even at Minneapolis.
Yeah. Twin Cities. You took the words right out of my mouth. In a couple years, it's going to an NFL stadium. It's going to US Bank Stadium. Over under right now, Kyle. What's the over under on attendance in Minneapolis?
25,000.
Okay.
I'm saying I got to go under on that.
I'm going to take the over. I'm going to take the over because I think the Gophers are going to be strong. I think the Hawkeyes are going to be strong. You look at Ohio State, Penn State, they're not going away. I think Oklahoma State has a chance to have a good team there. And I think, Minneapolis, easy to get in and out of.
True.
And also wrestling is important up there. So I think that we're going to see more than 25.
Let's hope I'm wrong on that one.
I hope you are too, Kyle.
Let's hope I'm wrong. Hey, and we haven't mentioned this, but we have a couple Twitter handles, Track Wrestling and Wrestling Museum. That's the best way. We want to hear from you. If you listen to this podcast, like a Phil Merrill out in Allendale, Michigan, I know he listens. We'd like to hear suggestions on guests, topics. We want to cover a wide variety of what you want to hear. So we've really never done that before, put that out there. But contact Andy on Track Wrestling. I know your email address, what is it, Andy?
Andy.Hamilton@sportsengine.com, or you can hit me up on Twitter @Andy_Hamilton.
Yeah, we'd love to hear questions, absolutely, comments. I think that's something we need to do more of. So
please, we're a show for the people, Kyle.
Yeah, we are. We want to hear from everyone about topics and even guests. I think there's a lot of great guests out there and stories that we may not have thought about. We have a whiteboard back here of guests that we'd like to get on the show. It's about 50 deep right now, but if you want to shoot us an email or a tweet, we'd love to hear from you. It's going to be a lot of fun. As we just break this down real quick, as we talked about the conference tournaments on our Rapid Wrestling recap, but as we go forward, I think we focus so much on the big teams, the big schools, but there's some schools like a Campbell with Kerry Collett, who I think got their first All-American in program history last year. Those are just as exciting at the NCAA championships as the team race. I think we're going to get a few of those this year.
Yeah, I think so. It's good to see new programs on the rise, or programs that have been established for a while on the rise, and programs that just haven't had All-Americans in a while coming back and accomplishing greater feats than what they have in the past. I think that's one I think of, certainly, is Campbell. And then, you look at a program like Duke, even, ACC school that, to my knowledge, I think they're the only varsity program on their campus that doesn't offer scholarships. And when you think about the cost of going to school there, you can't offer scholarships, the obstacles that are in play there. And yet, they got a guy like Jacob Casper, who's, I think, ranked third right now at heavyweight. The Fine Silvers, two sets of twins, which is pretty remarkable in itself. Two sets of twins from the same family. I don't know that I've ever heard of that before. All four guys are in the tournament. So if you're wrestling at the NCAA tournament, you got roughly a 2.5% chance of drawing a Fine Silver in the first round.
And what a great name. What a great last name. It's really cool to have those storylines, and there's a lot going into this. I know it's maybe a little played out, but the storyline that I'm interested in is just, where does Dean Heil end his career?
Oh, yeah.
Fourth place as a freshman, won the last two. Does he end above fourth? I mean, what would be the over-under on fourth place? That's kind of where I think Dean Heil is right now. Doesn't win the Big 12s, drops to Meredith, who he beat in the NCAA Championship Finals 2 years ago. He's a compelling storyline.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see where he's seated. I would imagine that it probably to be Meredith 1, followed by Ironman 2. He's been great ever since losing to Meredith in Reno, and Yanni Diakamahalis of Cornell, the stud freshman at 3. His only loss is to Ironman. Joey McKenna's only loss is to Tommy Thorne. He comes in with a Big Ten title. Kevin Jack, we've got him ranked 5th, two-time All-American from NC State. And then I think Heil probably slots in right after that. And so if the seeds play out that way, you're looking at a possible quarterfinal with Yanni. And that one's going to be a lot of fun, I think, because you got a guy that's got a lot of high power offense in Yanni Diakamahalis, a guy that's a really good scrambler, and Dean Heil that has in the past just found a way to win matches. you know, he's not blowing everybody away, but he's getting his hand raised time and time again. And so, you know, 141 is going to be a lot of fun from the quarters on. And I see potentially 6-7 guys there that could possibly win the tournament. And Dean Heil, certainly one of them. Yanni's another one of them. And we'll see who's there on Saturday night.
A lot of fun. We get a chance to watch two world team members finish out their career. Zane Rutherford going for his third NCAA championship. Kyle Snyder going for his third NCAA championship. Seems like 149 is a little more clear cut, although Brandon Sorensen gave a pretty good tussle in the Big Ten finals. I think he certainly has shown that he's on the upward swing of what he can do. And a lot of people want to know if he can knock him off, but certainly the Kuhn Snyder matchup is going to be the one that everyone's going to want to watch. And usually I don't want to watch heavyweight. I'm really looking forward to the heavyweight class this year.
Yeah. And for a 4-2 overtime heavyweight Big Ten final that there wasn't a takedown until the very end, and there weren't a lot of shots, really just a lot of pummeling. It was heart-stopping stuff the other day watching that. You know, I was on the edge of my seat the whole time watching Snyder Kuhn, and you know, like we said in the Rapid Wrestling recap, that, you know, I don't know that you really appreciate the size differential until you're mat side, and I think that you know, you just develop such a great appreciation for him when you can see him up close and personal. I mean, Kyle Snyder, the size that he's giving up, and to beat a guy of Adam Kuhn's caliber, not just a 285-pound man, but one who is extremely strong and a tremendous athlete on top of it, who has incredible pummeling skills. And, you know, it sets up for, you know, a incredible hype for a third match, right? I would guess that, you know, we could be looking at that one as the final match in Cleveland. Wouldn't that be something if the team race comes down to Snyder Kuhn?
that'd be fantastic. That'd be a great way to do it. We've seen that before where the team races come down to it. Stephen Neal in 99, he had to win for Iowa to win, and Minnesota had to have Brock Lesnar win for them to win. So it could be like that. Just on the opposite end of the spectrum, Iowa State is still a storyline because traditionally they're a huge power. They won it in 87, have the great legacy with a lot of Olympic champions. One qualifier. Pretty amazing to see them after, what, two last year, one qualifier this year, and he's a transfer from Virginia Tech. So Iowa State certainly has nothing but room to grow in their program going forward.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what their roster looks like at the beginning of next year. David Carr coming in is a huge plus for them. I think, you know, when you change coaches, you change cultures, you change, you know, basically everything, what the approach to training, how practices are run, philosophies, how kids are handled. You know, so this staff inherited a group that by and large was recruited by Kevin Jackson and his staff. And, you know, maybe guys that were fits for that regime aren't fits for this regime, or maybe the kids that, you know, feel like they need a fresh start somewhere else as well. So it will be interesting to see who's with the Cyclones at the start of next year. They've lost some guys already, and, you know, maybe they find better fits elsewhere for them. And also, you know, it helps expedite the turnover in Ames, the culture change in Ames, and they get the guys that they want on board there. I think there are some positives that occurred within that program this year. I think, you know, Ian Parker was taking steps in the right direction. We just talked about Dean Heil. Ian Parker posted a victory against Dean Heil, but suffered an injury down the stretch and wasn't quite the same after that match and did not qualify for the NCAA championships. So, you know, I thought they were going to have more than one for sure. I think we both did, and I thought we'd see some guys knocking on the door to maybe make the podium, and from that sense, it's probably a disappointment of a season along those lines, but we'll see what Dagan does here at the NCAA championships, and then also, you know, when they start plugging in guys like Austin Gomez in company in that lineup, what does it look like next year? Do we see David Carr in the lineup next year? I suspect, I mean, they've nowhere to go but up from here, right?
Let's end with this before we get to Tom Ryan. Let's give a crack here. You give your top four predictions. I'll give my top four. I think you've been on Ohio State from day one and feel like they're going to win it. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but your top four prediction for the Division I NCAA championships.
I would say number one will be Ohio State. I've said that from the beginning. I just think, I think Penn State's got one heck of a team, but when you add all of the individuals together and you've got, nine guys, like I said, potentially being in the top seven or eight in the seeds, and you've got Tishon Campbell there, a guy that could be seeded to potentially make the round of 12. If the bracket plays out the way you think it might, then you're looking at a ton of matches, volume, and the more matches you get, the more bonus point opportunities you get. I think Penn State is going to make this one heck of a race, but I think they're probably going to be a close second. I would guess that, based on the way that Michigan wrestled at the Big Ten Championships, they look like the team to beat for third right now. And in my mind, I mean, you've got Michich looked great. Pantaleo wrestling really well here the second half of the season, coming in with a Big Ten title. You've got Massa returning to form. 165 is really loaded, but that's a guy that if he is on his game and the bracket shakes out right, he could make the finals. Amin, another guy that has a chance to be really high up on the podium. Same with Dominic Abinader, who has never been an All-American, but I think he's probably, like, this is his year to really make a splash. Kevin Beasley, you don't know what you're going to get. I mean, he's been ranked like, I think he's ranked like 14th right now. An All-American a year ago, could be a guy that's high up on that podium, or maybe a guy that falls short of it. And 197 is wide open. And then, I'll be really shocked if Kuhn is not in the finals. Mm-hmm. So that's a team that with some serious horsepower. I think, if you're asking me to name the team right now that finishes fourth, I think you're probably looking at Missouri being that fourth place team just because of, Ernesty, a chance to be an All-American, good chance to be an All-American. Ironman, a chance to make the finals. Grant Leith is 22-2 and has not lost since, I think, the third week of November. La Valley looking at a potential two or three seed at 157. Daniel Lewis, potentially the three seed at 174. Willie Miklas at 197. So I think there are a lot of guys that can go deep in the tournament for Mizzou. I think Iowa is probably right there, maybe as a 4-5, 4-5 type of team, along with Lehigh. There's some other teams in that group as well. But I would give the nod right now to Missouri at four.
I'll just flip-flop a little bit. Penn State, number one for me. Ohio State, Michigan. I like Missouri so much. They have a good dual meet team. It's just going to be interesting to see what their firepower is at the NCAA championships. You don't have necessarily that one guy that you can bank on being in the finals. I'm going to go out there at NC State. I'm going to say at four.
Okay.
It's not, it might not happen, and they don't have any tradition that says they're going to get there, but
hey, they got some high power individuals. Yeah. I think Hayden Heidley will probably be the one seed. I would guess he's undefeated at 157. Nobody else can stake that claim.
Yeah.
What kind of performance do we see from him at the NCAA championships? They had a couple of really close matches at the ACCs. But they have some other guys as well that could go deep into the tournament. Kevin Jack, two-time All-American at 141, Pete Renda at 184, Mike Machiavello at 197, and then, some other guys throughout that lineup as well.
Yeah.
So,
and I can't wait to watch Jacob Casper. We talked about him. He's going to be a lot of fun.
We had him on the show.
Yeah. You had him on the show. It was fun to listen to that interview because I learned a lot about Duke that I just didn't know about going into that, and just with the challenges he faces.
Yep. Yeah. Fun guy to talk to. Some of these guys, it's really been enlightening for me to do the 7 minute series for track wrestling. Cause we've reached out and had a chance to interview, I think, close to 55, all Americans over the course of the last year and a half. And it's so many guys in this sport have incredible stories to tell. And he's one of them. He talked about what led him to Duke and the challenges that they encounter there. It's pretty incredible what that program has done with a lack of resources, a lack of the kind of support that other programs across the country are getting.
We're going to patch in Tom Ryan, head wrestling coach at Ohio State University. He was a two-time All-American for the University of Iowa and recently led the Buckeyes to back-to-back Big Ten championships. How are you, Tom?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing real good. We want to go way back to 2006 when Russ Helixson resigned as the head wrestling coach at Ohio State. It sent shockwaves through the country, and it really set a domino effect in college wrestling that we are still feeling today. Tom Brands goes in as the Iowa coach, Cale Sanderson as Iowa State. We remember it a certain way. What do you remember about that happening when the Ohio State job opened up and all of those dominoes fell?
Oh, man, I remember thinking, you know, so I was happy at Hofstra, right? So I was in a space of contentment, right? I love my job. I love the area. My family's from there. So by no means was I looking to, progress in any way. I was happy. When Heather Light called me, you begin to, you know, get the wheels turning up, and this would be quite an opportunity. Let me look into it. So obviously I let my AD know, let the administration know, but I remember it's just a sense of opportunity. You know, as you know, also at that time for me and my family, it was probably, the most painful, difficult time of all of our lives. As you know, we had just lost, you know, our third son. So there was just a lot going on in our lives at that time. We were, excited about the job, confused about life. And, you know, as soon as I went onto campus and visited, on my interview, I had a sense that, I gotta be here. I want this job. I want to be in this community, in this department. My family probably needs a change. My wife needs to get closer to home. She's from Bloomington, Indiana. And I began to, you know, really hone in on, you know, what needed to be done there to get the job and then, you know, build the program into, you know, the sleeping giant everyone called it.
Did you know that when Jim Zaleski left at Iowa, Bobby Douglas was out, that it really was a race to get those guys and that Ohio State was the program that was really leading the charge and why they moved so fast?
I knew this. I knew that, you know, that our community is small, and a lot of the coaches are obviously respect them and the friendships with them, competitive friendships. So I knew early on that it was going to be a stretch for me to get the position. If that's the question you're asking, like I knew that they wanted, at least they were really showing a lot of attention toward Cale, Tom Brands, you know, Zeke Jones. There were some guys that, had some more success than I did as a competitor. We're at programs that were doing well. I mean, thank God Hofstra was doing extremely well. You know, it was a blessing to this day that the men that wrestled for me there, I had some really great seasons in a row, which kind of put me in a position to be looked at. But I kind of had a sense that, you know, I wasn't going to be their top choice, but if I could get an interview, I felt like I would have a chance.
Now that you have won an NCAA championship, you got to the mountaintop in 2015, you got a championship, but you came close in 2009. Did you know that it was going to be that difficult to be able to finally put the pieces together to get it done?
You know, things, you know, when you're talking about being, you know, elite, I know that nothing comes easy. I knew it'd be hard, but quite frankly, I did think that we would have more titles sooner. A title sooner. You know, I thought it was my second year there. We were kind of close to my third year. I thought we had one. I thought we were going to win. And there was a couple of crazy scenarios that occurred, in the placing rounds with forfeits and points. And man, it was a little bit like heart wrenching, like, man, we had this thing won and we didn't win it. And you know, you grow from it and you figure out how you can get better. And so, yeah, I thought we'd win be more dominant sooner, but didn't work out that way. And I guess, you know, you reflect back, I think it was just wasn't our time, wasn't God's plan, it wasn't whatever. So,
well, you won your back-to-back Big Ten championships. You won one in 2015 and now back-to-back championships. Why do you think people downplay the conference championships a little bit? Because to me, it seems pretty important. Why do you think there's this rationale to downplay the conference tournament and just focus on nationals?
Yeah, I'm not sure why, you know, to win the Big Ten championship in a conference like the Big Ten, it has tremendous value for us. Do we want to, you know, do you want to win one more than the other? Well, I mean, I think that's sure. Why would you, but you know, we want to give our best effort in both of those events. You know, and beating Penn State last year at the Big Tens was without question. I think many would view it as an upset. We had to win five matches. You know, we won five matches in the Big Tens last year that I'm not sure we were necessarily favored in any of them. So without a ridiculously strong performance, you know, they would have won the Big Ten and Nationals. I think it speaks a lot to, if you win the Big Tens, you know, normally you are certainly in the hunt for an NCAA championship. So anyone that, you know, would say that, you know, we don't really focus on the conference tournament, we focus on the NCAA tournament, that's not where I'm at. You know, I certainly want to peak better at the NCAAs than the Big Tens, but we want both.
Tom, you guys have used the hashtag positive infinity on social media. Yeah. What does that mean? Where did that come from?
Yeah. So that's two statistics guys on a bicycle, warming up before practice. It's Clay Ragon, Kyle Snyder, and his brother, Kevin. They're all in a stats class together, and they were on a bike just talking about class and infinity. And someone said, you know, positive infinity is this, and positive infinity. Yeah. Positive. So it just started as a conversation while working out and, you know, took on a life of its own. And Kyle went and had shirts made and you know, what does it mean? And, you know, we talked as a team about what it means to each person. And I mean, the beauty of it is it means whatever you want it to mean. There is no definition of positive infinity. There's some things that it isn't, but there's a lot of things that it is. So it became something kind of goofy and fun, and it's never negative.
You're coming to the end of a finite amount of time, a 7-year run where you might have the most remarkable 2-person stretch of individual performance. You have Logan Stieber, 4-time NCAA champion. There's only been 4 of those in Division I. And then Kyle Snyder is doing things that nobody's ever done. Maybe get 3 NCAA championships, already a 3-time world and Olympic champion. When you're in that, you have a 7-year run like that. What's that like to have 2 individuals like that in your program and knowing that it's almost over?
Yeah. So, you know, you certainly reflect on, look, when Logan came, I knew he could be, it was incredibly unique. You know, we thought he could win 4, but right, thinking about it and applying and seeing it come to life in your worlds apart. So he wins 4, and the year he wins his 4th, I'm thinking Kyle's going to win his first of 4, right? He gets caught in a position, great move by Datsun. But, you know, we're talking about someone that, to your point, we would have our 2nd 4th in a 4-year period, right? 15 to 18. If this throw doesn't occur and Kyle wins the match, fast forward, he goes on, wins world Olympic championships. You have a sense of, certainly have a sense of pride in the culture, in the environment, that, you know, it was Logan's success that, you know, compelled Kyle to really look hard at Ohio State. You know, it was Lance Palmer, Jay Jaggers, Basilo's success, Bergman's success that led, you know, led Logan. So I think it's a follow the leader type thing. You know, I think really smart people that are dedicated and determined to reaching their full potential, they know they need to pursue those that have done it. And we're just really fortunate he chose Ohio State, and really fortunate that the environment that he's in has helped him, you know, reach some of the things that he wants to reach for, which are extremely high. And we're proud of it. We're proud of him. We're proud of the environment. You know, we're proud of what he's done. And feel really fortunate that our paths have crossed.
Were you ever worried that Kyle Snyder might not come back after winning the world championships?
Yeah.
You were?
I mean, after the Olympics, I got a little concerned. I mean, Kyle is so rooted in, for his family. Look, I mean, people like this don't just, right, just don't, they don't pop out of thin air, right? This is someone that was raised in a home where accountability and the things that mattered, mattered. You'd never got a pass. There was never a moment. How hard is the parent? I mean, I'm a parent of four. How hard is the parent every time sticking to the principles that you laid out? It's hard. It's time consuming. You need to think about it constantly. There's a guy that was raised in that home. When you're raised in a home like that, where every time something you weren't quite doing things you should, you were held accountable, you get a guy like Kyle Snyder. I told the dad and Kevin Snyder and Steven Snyder and their sister. So, you know, I'm not surprised that all and Kyle Snyder, I'd like to say that, you know, Ohio State Wrestling, we played a small role in it, but mom and dad in that home have taught this kid principles that, you know, are game changers for anyone. So,
Tom, how would you have approached the Penn State dual meet different?
How would I approach the Penn State dual meet different? You know, I'm not sure I would approach it differently at all. I think in retrospect, I probably would have tried to control my emotions a little more. I think as a leader, you know, when you assess, you know, every guy on my team, after a dual meet assesses their performance, right? They got to turn in a written document that assesses everything about their performance. So when I turned mine in, I was emotional, probably too much. You know, my main responsibility is to be a stress reducer. I'm not sure I was that. I think we could have prepared them a little better. When they wrestle well, it's on us. And when they wrestle poorly, we take ownership of that as well. So, you know, I think as poorly as we wrestled, you know, there are also some real interesting situations that occurred that were outside our control. Penn State wrestled a great match. They got a great team. And for the most part, in that crowd, in that environment, we didn't handle it as well as I thought we would. And they outworked us in a couple of critical moments that determined the dual meet. Everybody took responsibility for the loss, not one or two of us. We were all responsible, all 10 athletes, all backups, all staff. And I think it was what I would call as productive discomfort. It wasn't deep pain. Riding the bus ride home, we were all uncomfortable. Right, there was some productive discomfort. No deep pain. Right, wrestling matches don't cause deep pain when you lose, and if they do, you should probably evaluate the way you think about your life. But they certainly caused discomfort, and I think we all felt that. And I think we released some of that at the Big Tens, and hopefully we can do it again at the Nationals.
Nathan Tomasello is a great story because he came in injured after the U23 World Team Trials and has really had a remarkable season up to this point. Shows a lot of grit, shows a lot of guts. What have you seen in his ability to overcome setbacks that allows him to win four Big Ten championships and be in a position to win a second national championship in a couple weeks?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think with anyone that can endure setbacks, you know, these really discomforting moments in your life, if you're not balanced, you're in trouble, right? If you're not balanced, you turn to the bottle. If you're not balanced, you just forget all the real responsibilities you have in your life, and you run to something that is going to produce nothing, no fruit in your life. Well, Nathan Tomasello is grounded in the things that produce fruit, and that's his faith, as is Kyle Snyder and many other people that I'm around. So Nathan is balanced. I was sitting at the dinner table when I got a phone call from the U23s. I was watching the match on my phone at a restaurant with my family and my in-laws for her birthday party. That's not typical, but my wife understood it was Nate. He's in the finals. And I'm going to watch the match during the steak dinner. So I'm watching the match, and he unfortunately loses. And I get a text about 5 minutes after the match. I was disappointed he lost, but dinner goes on. I got a text from Travell saying that he could have a significant injury. So I get up from the dinner table. Dinner's over. I apologize to my family. Listen, I'm sorry. I'm extremely emotional over this. And I'm going to be back here in a little while. So I went outside the restaurant. I talked to Nate, talked to DeVell, talked to the doctor. And it was what we felt was a season-ending injury. It's so there's a lot of concern for Nate. I mean, it's a guy that's 2 seconds away, literally, from going for a fourth national title. Get a leg in the air to win against Gilman. He took him down on the buzzer, didn't get it. He didn't have the takedown. Gilman won, but it was close. He had Clark's leg to finish, to move in the finals again. So we're talking about a guy that's dealt with some real tough losses, who does everything right. So it was painful for him. It was painful for our program. You know, how can the team, reach the pinnacle of what we want again this year without Nate? So there's selfish reasons. You don't want to win another national championship. So all the pride comes into play, your care for your athlete, just all the real emotions. And from that moment at that dinner table to the rehab, to finding out that the injury was severe, but he'd be able to wrestle with it, to the training, to the rehab, to the relationship conversations, to all those things. From those moments to the moment Nate got the takedown in the last 30 seconds, you can't describe them, right? You can't describe them. It's you don't go from where he was to what he did. The fan sees very little. They see a nice takedown. But living with them, walking alongside them, being there with them, dealing with the emotions and the training, it's a priceless gift that coaches get to have.
Tom, we hear so much about Tervell's brilliance and the way he thinks and how his approach is maybe different than a lot of people. How did you get him to Columbus? What has he meant to your program, and how do you keep him in Columbus?
Yeah, so I think we all know this, right? We all want to be around people that can build us, that can build into us, and Tervell wanted to be around Tommy Rollins, because Tommy was one of the elite heavyweights at the time wrestling at our regional training center. When I got the job, the first thing I knew I had to do was hire some Ohio people. And I was an outsider. I didn't want to be viewed as an outsider. So if people are going to think you're an outsider, let me bring in some insiders. So I hired Joe Heskett, Tommy Rollins, and Lou Roselli. So when I got Tommy, Tommy was friends with a lot of people, and he was friends with Tervell. So we were able to get Tervell to move here to train at our training center. So in the process of moving here and training in our training center, I got to know him as a human being. And then, like everybody does, when you meet Tervell, you fall in love with him. So he was here as an athlete, made 2 Olympic teams, won a bunch of U.S. Opens, won some world medals. And when Lou left, obviously I had a plan in place when Lou was going to leave. You know, Tervell was the communication was, Tervell, we're going to bring you on board. And, so that's how we met. We met through someone that was like-minded to Tervell. And Tervell is priceless. I mean, he's a great man. He's a great thinker. He's simple. He loves the sport. He's intelligent. He treats people with respect always. He's great for me. He compliments, some of my weaknesses. And, I think I help him in many ways. So we're just a great team, and we're really fortunate that he's with us.
We're recording this before the NCAA brackets come out, but you're part of the championship committee. Can you take us behind the scenes a little bit about what that looks like for you? What all goes into those couple days in Indy as you're sorting everything out?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, I'm driving back. You leave the Big Tens and you head basically right to these meetings that are 2 days of just like jury duty. You're in the meeting. You're in the building. You don't leave for a while. And there's a sense of responsibility, a sense of accountability to it's emotional. There's about 40 families that are going to be impacted, and their son earning a wild card spot or not. There's 6 people on the committee, and then there's Pat Tosi and Anthony Holman and a few others that, play a role. A lot of data is thrown our way on winning percentages and RPIs and big wins. And, So there's a bunch of data that we look at, we assess, and overall, it's just a sense of responsibility, you know, to make sure that the best 330 people are in the field and that they're seated appropriately. So there's six of us, and we hash it out. And at the end of the day, you come up with some at-large bids and 10 tournament brackets.
Is that something you enjoy, or are you going to be glad when your time on that committee is up and you just go from Big Tens back to the practice room and start gearing up for NCAAs?
Yeah. I think a little bold. I really enjoy it. You know, I like being on committees. I think it's a responsibility of coaches that, you know, are at institutions that can really maybe have a positive impact on the sport. I think it's important that we serve on these committees. So I really do enjoy it. I look forward also to the next coach being on the committee and, you know, knowing that the committee and the process has been refined by me and some other coaches being on it and some great administrators. It continually refines, and each year you find something that, you know what, that's a really interesting situation. We should take that in consideration and make a change to better refine the process so no coach or no parent ever feels that they were slighted. They may feel that it didn't go their way, but they should never feel they were slighted. And if our system is producing those feelings, we got to refine it. And I think it's become really, really well refined, and we'll keep getting better.
Tom, universally, I hear this from media. I hear it from fans. I love Tom Ryan. They like the way you treat them. They like the way that you engage people. Are you conscious that people are drawn to you in that way and that you have that positive effect on people?
I think I just feel really blessed. You know, I don't think it's fake. I'm really grateful. You know, I was a kid raised by a family that, you know, got me a big wheel, a fishing pole, some wrestling shoes, a headgear, and life was really good. And I started a sport that I never thought I'd be in the position I was in, that I'm currently in. And I'm just really grateful for every person. I mean, I love the people in the sport. I love what the sport teaches. And I'm just grateful for anyone that cares to tell the stories of the people in the sport. I'm truly grateful for those people. And the media are those people. And whether they have something to say that, you know what, may not be what I wanted to hear, whatnot, the bottom line is that we're grateful for those that love to tell the story of the great sport. And that's how I feel.
Prime against prime, Kurt Angle against Kyle Snyder. What does that match look like?
Wow, what a doozy. It was funny. I was watching, I was on Facebook and saw his match, which came up recently. In the last 2 weeks, someone posted the Kurt Angle versus the Iranian Olympic finals match. I mean, what a battle. Obviously, Kyle's my guy, right? Kurt was a great one. I mean, Kurt was a friend. Kurt was someone that was wrestling when I was wrestling. Both great, you know, low singles and physical, and he was a lefty, we're a righty. And recently, a great story. I hadn't talked to Kurt in a while, but we had a donor, a friendship that I was building with someone, and I met with him for lunch, and you getting to know him, hey, what do you like to do? And the guy was like, man, I love WWE. I go, wow, really? You're a WWE fan. So I said, who do you love? He goes, I love Kurt Angle, man. I think this guy, I like following him. So, you know, I left the meeting and sent Kurt a text. And this is a friend, you know, Mike, but this guy that I had lunch with could really support us and really help us. So I sent Kurt a text and said, listen, I got a buddy that I'm building a relationship. It'd be really cool if you could give him a call for me. Can we talk about it? Called me right away. Hey, what can I do to help, man? I said, listen, this guy, you know, he's done well in life. He really likes you. He's followed you. Would you mind calling him? He says, of course, I'll call him. So I sent the guy at lunch with a text and said, hey, one of my buddies going to be calling you. Please don't hang up. It is who he said. He said, just take the call. So Kurt called him and they spoke for a while. And that's kind of a roundabout story to who I think would win. I haven't answered your question. I think it answers the question of building relationships with people and this bond that wrestlers have when, you know, when someone's in need or needs a little favor, you know, I think people go out of their way to help each other.
Tom, we like to play games on this show, and we've selected a game for you called True or False. I'm going to give you five statements. Okay. You tell me true or false. You can elaborate on your answer and why you give that. In fact, we encourage it. Are you ready to play a game of true or false?
Let's go.
All right. Number one, Abraham Lincoln was not born in Illinois.
False.
It's actually true. He was born in Kentucky. So
Abraham Lincoln was not born in Illinois.
Yeah.
Got it.
So that is actually true.
Okay.
All right. Statement two, there will be a NCAA sanctioned dual meet championship in the next 10 years.
True.
Wow. You think that's true, huh? I hope you're right.
Either we do it or we will falter. That's how powerfully I believe in it. I don't know if everyone knows this, but we are losing time on ESPN. We are battling right now with events that we just shouldn't be battling with. The NCAA tournament, as spectacular as it is, we either for us to think that things are we're living in this. Listen, our place was packed this year, 15,000 people for dual meet. Penn State, some of these facilities are packing, but we have got to continue to be creative and grow and transform. And the reason why crowds are growing is because programs that have small budgets have the internet and Instagram and Snapchat and Twitter. And with a very small budget, you can share your story with the world. Before that, right before the internet, you were only alive if you were on TV, right? You were either on TV or you did not exist. That has all changed. People can watch a dual meet driving home in their car, on their web, on their computer. So it will be the single greatest mistake. And it has been, for the last 30 years. If there was a greater impact desire to make dual meets matter more, I don't think wrestling would be in the position it is now. So I'm saying yes.
Okay.
Or we're going to be in trouble.
All right. Statement three, true or false. Outside of the conference championships and the NCAA championships, college wrestling is an exciting sport.
True. But it could be way more exciting. Things get really exciting when there are ramifications. The stakes are higher, and anything that we can do to increase the stakes what's at stake in any particular event, that will only add to the excitement.
Statement four, we are currently in the greatest era for wrestling in the United States. True or false?
I think I'll say true. And I'm not going to say greatest era. I'm going to say greatest opportunity, because we can reach more people than ever before. But if our plan isn't founded on basic principles that will help growth, it will be the greatest squandering of an opportunity that the sport has ever seen.
Final statement, number five, true or false. Tom Ryan got the best of Dan Gable in practice at the University of Iowa.
False. Coach Gable and I, he drilled, he showed moves on me, but he was afraid to wrestle. That's not true. But all I can tell you is that I never went live with him, but I used to wrestle our 197 pounder. I even wrestled our heavyweight John Ozendorf once or twice. So I could go up weight classes. And when I watched him wrestle our 97 pounder, and I did a comparison of what happened when I wrestled our 97 pounder, was Travis Spicer. I was now the head coach down at Grundy, roommate, great friend. When I watched Gable wrestle him and reflected on what happened when I wrestled him, I concluded clearly that it would not go well for me if we did.
Okay. Well, hey, you're out of the game.
So what is that called?
Transitive property.
Transitive property.
Andy came up with it right away.
I applied that.
That's fantastic. What's that? Now, he came up with a transitive property right there.
Yeah. So, yeah, buy that property. We never competed against each other live, but I'm glad we did.
All right. You're out of our game of true or false. Thanks for taking the time. You are in a great team race with Penn State. It's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks for taking this time with us before the NCAA championships.
Thanks, guys.
All right. That was Tom Ryan, head wrestling coach at Ohio State. Andy, what a lot of insight there. Just a lot of fun. You just see why he's so successful and why Ohio State's a team we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we went a half hour with Tom Ryan. We could have probably gone 3 hours with Tom Ryan. We, you know, so many things to talk about, right? He's got such a fascinating team with a lot of interesting characters on that team. I mean, we didn't really even touch upon Bo Jordan being, 22, 23 years old and married, father of two, or Miles Martin, guy that wins it as a true freshman, or even Colin Moore, who's had a really interesting season this year. So many guys in that lineup that have fascinating stories. We didn't even get going on any of that. And it felt like we could have probably talked for, you know, at least another hour about Tom's thoughts on the future of college wrestling and where we're at right now as a sport. But, I always enjoy the conversations with Tom Ryan. I always say that the best interviews aren't interviews, they're conversations. And, you know, when you talk to Tom Ryan, when you turn a recorder on or you get him on a podcast or put a video camera in his face, they are conversations. They're not interviews.
And he said 20 minutes is preferable. And we just put up to the 30-minute timeline there. So we pushed the envelope. We appreciate his time. It's going to be an unbelievable team race. Looks like it's going to be Penn State and Ohio State. Don't forget Michigan and some of the other teams that have shown they can be in the team race. But it's going to be a lot of fun at the 2018 NCAA Championships in Cleveland, Ohio. For Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com, I'm Kyle Klingman. You've been listening to On the Mat.
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.